Hey there, it's Ross. You want to learn more about what it takes to actually be first with fans? Well, we've got a newsletter, V by Viacom, that will teach you just that. Subscribe, I do, at vbyviacom.com/subscribe. Okay, here's the show. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Fan Club, the podcast that explores why we love what we love. I'm your host, Ross Martin. New Yorkers like me are used to waiting for some things, like the subway. Or we're used to watching other people wait for things like Broadway theater tickets. I am not throwing away my shot. The one thing that New Yorkers will always stand on line for is incredible food.
Yeah, the longest line we've seen was 4.5 hours, which took up the entire block and some.
Last time I came here, the line was like 10 times longer, so I got lucky today.
For example, these people who've queued up outside NYU.
So what made you want to wait in line?
I love cookie dough.
Dough is one of the latest trendy spots in downtown New York.
People try to jump lines, people curse people out. It's dough time.
I was super excited about this place. My friend Lauren told me about it, and she said it's so good.
What flavor do you want to get?
Ooh, I don't know, maybe something with sprinkles?
You know it's good. There's a line for it.
You'll be surprised what people will do for their cookie dough.
You heard that right. Cookie dough. And of course, this isn't the first or the last food craze. Food and dining is not just an experience anymore. It's an obsession that we can share on Instagram, that we can let the world know we waited this many hours for that rainbow bagel or the cronut or the Shake Shack burger. Well, on today's show, we'll talk with the food editor of Bon Appetit about some of the craziest new fads in food.
Why does a rainbow bagel exist?
And then we're going to talk to celebrity chef Tom Colicchio, who's going to tell us about the one customer that he geeked out over.
Every guy in the place wanted to get up and say hi to him.
It's foodies and food fandom on Fan Club. Carla Lolly Music has the best job in the world. That's because she's the woman who's in charge of food at a food magazine. Not just any food magazine, Bon Appetit magazine, which I think is the food magazine. Her days are spent making, tasting, and testing all kinds of glorious things like lemon buttermilk donuts, saffron rosewater pistachio brittle, fried smelt, and for me, I would find that last one a little challenging for my palate. But this is just the latest stop in Carla's career, and it's the kind of career that would make anybody who loves food jealous. And I'll tell you why. First, she studied at the French Culinary Institute. She was a line cook at the famous Montrachet restaurant in New York. And she was even the general manager, and this is my favorite thing ever, of the first Shake Shack, like the one that made Shake Shack, Shake Shack. And all that stuff that she's done, all these experiences have meant that she's had a front row seat in the world of food fandom for a long time. So she is perfect for us and for this podcast, Fan Club. Welcome to Fan Club, Carla.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so there's so many things I want to ask you, and this episode is really dedicated to food fandom. And you know, it's not something we talk about that much. Do you talk about food in terms of fans? Do you think of like food fans?
We think of food fads. Mm. And I think that every fad is a fad because it has a lot of fans. Mm-hmm. So there's fads and then there's trends. And I would say that we dabble in both, right? And our goal, because it's a it's equal parts sort of like getting out and experiencing the world of food, Bon Appetit, like going to restaurants is a big part of it. But then we're also really into chefs kind of giving that energy back to us so we can turn it into things that people can actually cook at home. So it's sort of straddling the line between like getting out there to experience this new thing and, oh my gosh, you went out and experienced this new thing. You can actually take that home.
Well, as the editor for food at Bon Appetit, I think it's like you cover this phenomenon, right? You cover the trends, you cover the emerging fandoms around certain kinds of food and food experiences. But the thing is, before this, you were like at the center of creation of food fandom, right? Like everybody remembers the line in the park.
Yeah.
What park was that?
Madison Square Park.
That all, it's like you as far as the eye could see, and then you just follow the line to the front. You're like, what are they all in line
for? Exactly.
They're online at a freaking Shake Shack. You're like, what the hell's there?
And it's so funny that you say it that way, because that is what people remember. People remember the line,
yeah,
not necessarily the burger, right?
Right.
So the burger is like the burger was good, right? So waiting online was worth it. But what I think the frenzy was as much about the line as anything else. And I remember before I worked there, the summer before I worked there, it was a very short season when they had transitioned from, it was just a table. It was like 2 6-foot tables where they were doing hot dogs, lemonade, and like some of the sweets. And that was so insane that they got the RFP to like have the actual freestanding restaurant. But I remember when it was still just two tables, I worked on 22nd Street.
And was there a line?
And there was this line. And I remember, because I was already working in food, I worked at a restaurant, and I would go and sit in the park and just like, what are they doing? Like, the line was the thing. Like, what are these people waiting for? And it was like potato chips and hot dogs, which in New York City you could get literally on every corner. So there was some kind of magic thing happening.
But this is not a phenomenon limited to, you know, Danny Meyer burgers. This is like Soup Nazi, same thing.
Right.
This is Cronut.
Yes.
Same thing.
Yeah.
And how often does it happen? Like once every couple of years?
I think it's happening closer and closer together now. Mm. And I think that it's fueled by the internet and social media in a way that back then things weren't. Mm-hmm. And I think also of Magnolia Bakery, where, you know, the cupcakes from Sex and the City.
That's right.
And how that place was open for like a long time. And then it was on the show, and then it became a destination.
But it's
and
not it, the best. It's not
no,
the best cupcake
no,
ever.
No, but it's like the whole thing.
Yeah.
Oh, this is where they were. This is that corner. This is the exact same place. And then once the line is created, then it's like what you were saying. What are these people waiting? But I think it's a mixed bag now, because I think people, for fads, go crazy over stuff that may or might not actually be awesome.
Well, what? Give us some examples of those fads that you're seeing.
Cupcakes were a thing, right? And Magnolia is a great bakery. But then there were like a lot of crappy cupcakes out there. And they were popular because of something, but I'm not sure what. But just because it was popular didn't mean you were necessarily going to get a good cupcake.
It sounds like the Kardashians.
A little bit.
Popular for the sake of being.
Right. It's like, what did you ever do? Rainbow bagel. Why do you exist? Why does a rainbow bagel exist?
So the rainbow bagel
the
is
rainbow
the Kim
bagel.
Kardashian of
the rainbow
pastries.
Bagel, when my son asked me for a rainbow bagel, I was like, really? I don't want to get you one. And he was like, Mom, please, the rainbow bagel. Like, you know, that is something that is made for Instagram. 100%.
Right.
There is no other reason why a rainbow bagel should exist.
I hate buying them because I feel a little bit.
So you've had to buy them too? I'm not the only.
Yeah, I buy them probably at the same bagel place that you buy them. But here's the thing. It's embarrassing more for you because you're the editor of food.
But I'm also like, I understand. I'm like, right, of course. Even my 7-year-old knows about rainbow bagels.
Your 7-year-old is a rainbow bagel fan.
Kid doesn't even have Instagram,
right?
But he's like, oh, that's the place with the rainbow bagel,
God.
Which is not a good thing and shouldn't exist.
Yeah, so this is the question. There's really, when we study fandom, there's not that much of a difference between a hit show, a hit sneaker, a hit song, or a hit food.
Right.
But if I were to ask you, what makes a hit food? How would you even begin to answer a question like
that? Yeah, that's really tricky, because some of the things, and, you know, I've been at Bon Appetit for over five and a half years. And so I have this, you know, pretty intimate relationship with the recipes we publish, the interaction that we get from our readers, the things that end up on our top recipe of the year for the end of the year. You know, those are always really revealing and interesting. And, you know, 4 years ago, the top three things were just salmon, quinoa, and chicken. It was like pretty much dependable that like those are going to be your top search terms and your top performing recipes. Mm. Kind of
boring.
Boring.
Yeah.
But like you get, right? People want to eat, and like those, they're looking for
a way to
make that interesting or different.
Right.
Last year, the top performing recipe for 2016 was frosé.
I don't even know what that is.
You're maybe the last person in America.
What's a frosé? I'm not.
Frosé is a slushy made with rosé.
Oh.
So maybe 5 years ago, it was like rosé all of a sudden was not just something that like people drank it, you know, in the French Riviera. All of a sudden, it was like everybody was drinking rosé. It was the thing, pink wine, blah, blah, blah. 2 years later, it's like, let's go one step further. Let's turn rosé into a slushy. And then it was literally everywhere.
Well, see, that's the thing that's weird. Like when you have a hit TV show, we know who the creator is.
Right.
And that's up on screen every time.
Yeah.
When you have a hit food phenomenon.
Right.
Yeah, there's Shake Shack, Danny Meyer. But most of the time, we don't really know where that hybrid came from.
Right. And yeah, and I'm thinking of another example that was really big last year, which was the teardrop cake. This was another kind of internet phenomenon. It went viral. It's basically a completely clear blob that has no color and is the texture of a very loose, wobbly gelatin, but it keeps this orb shape. So it has a little bit of like a gelatin type. It's agar-agar that holds it together. But it was like clear and translucent. It looks like a raindrop that you can like spoon into. And someone posted it, and then it was everywhere. And then there, in moments, a million imitators, right? So like we didn't invent frosé. But when frosé was big, we were able to create our own frosé recipe that was like, tasted good, looks like it. There's no, you're not taking a classic recipe. This is not, you know.
No, you're drawing inspiration from right. something that you see fans are responding to.
And just recreating it.
So, Carla, has there ever been a time at Bon Appetit when you're covering food and you think fans are headed one way and then it turns out you maybe didn't get it right or they shifted more quickly than you thought away from that? Has that ever happened with
I think we've food? Had some misfires with matcha, actually.
Oh, right. The green
As
tea
like
stuff.
The green tea, the green powdered tea yeah. that is so popular now that there are tea places just devoted to matcha.
Yeah.
I think that the miscalculation there was that people were going to want to cook with matcha at home. So all this matcha related things like matcha donuts and matcha icing, matcha cake, matcha whatever.
People matcha are not incorporating in everything. That in their own
when
kitchen.
We publish stories about going to have matcha and who has great matcha and matcha is a thing, yes, those will track. But our matcha donut, the matcha colored Christmas cookie,
not so much.
Like not so much.
Okay.
And so I think that that was sort of a realization that like that's a thing people want to experience, but it's too weird and like too specialized to do at home.
What a great insight! Best meal you ever had?
I'm speechless.
Chef, you're the biggest fan of.
Oh my God. Chef, I'm the biggest fan of.
Right now.
I'm this is a cop out, but the cooks in the Bon Appetit Test Kitchen inspire me on a daily basis more than any chef I've ever worked with.
I love it. I love how much of a food fan you are. Carla Lolly Music, thanks for joining us on Fan Club.
Thank you so much.
That was Carla Lolly Music. She's the food editor for Bon Appetit magazine. You should also check out her Instagram account at Lolly Music. Hey guys, I want to take a quick break and tell you about a whole different way that you can learn about fandom. It's our newsletter. It comes out every week, and just like this podcast, it's full of all kinds of fascinating insights into the future of entertainment, media, marketing, and of course, fandom. Here's a few things that I learned recently when I was reading it. One, 88% of millennial men are comfortable with their significant other making more money than they do. Count me in. 82% of Gen Xers feel that work-life balance matters more than snagging a corner office. And third, when it comes to buying power, brands need to work a little harder to woo the LGBTQ community. Because we're talking about $917 billion up for grabs. You see what I mean? Media is changing faster than we all realize. It always is. Keep up. Learn something new every week, just like I do. Subscribe to the V by Viacom newsletter at vbyviacom.com/subscribe. Okay, back to the show. So when you live in New York City, you go out to dinner a lot. I mean, it's just like what you do. Now, I remember the first time I stepped foot in Gramercy Tavern, and I walk into the restaurant, and the first thing I notice is Jessica Alba, and they sat me next to her. So I just ordered whatever she was ordering, and then I just was so nervous the whole time I couldn't even eat anything. I just was trying to like make sure she didn't see me looking at her, but that's all I was really doing. So I had this constant battle between like my interest in the food and my interest in Jessica Alba. And in that moment, I could see that Jessica Alba just really enjoying the experience she was having with her food. And that's because she's a fan of my next guest, Tom Colicchio. And it just seems like everybody's a fan of Tom Colicchio, especially if you've eaten in one of his restaurants. He's a top celebrity chef. He's a guy who's opened so many incredible restaurants. And as you can tell, clearly I'm a huge fan, so I'm excited to have him here on today's show. Welcome to Fan Club, Tom Colicchio.
Thank you.
Growing up, did you have, I know you didn't put him on a pedestal, but did you have favorite chefs as you started to develop your voice?
Two chefs that, one I did work with and the other I wish I had, Pierre Garnier and Michel Bras. I thought that these two chefs were doing amazing food. They were doing food that was different. It was clear that they weren't emulating anyone. This was their own personality, their own thing. And I found that those two were, at least for me, the most exciting chefs of, you know, mm-hmm. when I was coming up. I would go, and Garnier's restaurant was outside of Lyon in a town called Saint-Étienne. Now he's in Paris. And I remember going there the first time, just looking at the food going, you know, how did he do this?
Right.
And then Michel Bras was, I worked in his kitchen in a town called La Guillole. And since then, he's moved outside of town in this beautiful restaurant. This was his mother's parents' restaurant that he took over. But he was doing some really cool things. Again, going back 20 years ago, he was a runner. And he was a marathon runner. And he would get up in the morning and run and collect wild, he would forage.
Wow.
And come back with like really cool stuff. He also had just a style of plating that was like nobody else.
Why do you think it is that people have become so smitten, not just with the food that they eat, but with the person that's making it?
Well, listen, this goes back to late 70s France. Nouvelle cuisine was all the rage. Most people think nouvelle cuisine, they think smaller portions, they think different combinations of food. Prior to that, everything was usually French served mm-hmm. off a platter. Now, all of a sudden, you have plates, and the chef's personality is on that plate.
Right.
You can tell right away a Paul Bocuse plate from a Michel Gérard plate, from an Alain Chapelle plate, from a Trois Gros Brothers plate. So you start seeing these personalities. Now, people want to know, what are behind these personalities? And so then, you know, in the 80s, the same thing in America, you started want to know about the personalities of Alice Waters or Jeremiah Tower or Jonathan Waxman, people like that. And books are starting to happen. Now, all of a sudden, what happens right after that? In the 90s, at some point, you have a TV station that's dedicated to chefs.
And these characters are right there in your television. Yeah.
And so now you're getting to know them even more.
Right.
Chefs come out from behind the stove. People want to know who they are. They want to know how they shop, why they do what they do. So it just all, you know, started. And then cooking and food just became part of pop culture.
Right.
Like music and, you know, like art. And so, yeah, I get it. I mean, it's just people want to know who's behind. They always want to know people who are behind what's going on at that moment.
What about the word foodie? Because it's like you can't really do an episode on super fans of food and not use that word foodie. Do you like that word? Is that a word that works for you? What does that even mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's a fan of food, a foodie. It has all kinds of, you know, connotations these days. It's these super fanatic, you know.
I think it sounds judgy. I'm gonna judge your food. Like
it does. Someone asked me the other day something like, you know, and they said it must be impossible if you go out. You're always judging. And I said, no, I get paid to do that on TV. When I go out, I just want to experience
right.
it.
No, but do you go on Instagram and see your food sometimes on there and go like, that's kind of awesome. My fans are like promoting
my
food.
Yeah, I did a thing this weekend. I was just dying. We have a house on the North Fork of Long Island. We had some dinner party with all our friends who were out there. So it was like 11 adults. And I made confit. So I mm-hmm. made a cassoulet. Mm-hmm. But you start with a confit of pork and confit of duck. And so I had duck wings confit and duck legs confit and a shoulder of pork. And I posted that on Instagram.
And?
28,000 views.
28,000 views? You're just cooking out.
Usually the stuff that I post, it doesn't get that much. So it caught fire for some reason.
What do you want people to feel when they're in your restaurants?
I want them to feel that we are there to make sure that they're going to have a good time, that we're on their side, that we're there for them, they're not doing us a favor. You know, this idea that sometimes you feel like, well, I'm doing them a favor just by showing up. Or no, I want them to feel that they're enjoying themselves, that they're understanding it, that they're, again, we want to make them happy. That's really it. If people leave feeling good about themselves, good about the money they just spent, feel that there's value there at whatever price point it is, then we're doing our job.
What is an example of an extreme effort you've put in or someone on your staff has put in, mm-hmm. something that you and your team have done to surprise and delight or fulfill a fan?
There's thousands of examples of things that we've done over the years. You know, the easiest thing to do is if someone notes that it's a birthday, making sure that that's acknowledged. So what we do, if someone comes in, it's a birthday or an anniversary, they get a special menu that says Happy Birthday So-and-So. It's nice. Actually printed on the menu.
Nice.
And they take that home. And so that's an example of the smallest little gesture that people feel that you actually heard them when they made the reservation and said it's a birthday. It wasn't like someone had to remind them.
Right.
As soon as they sit down, they know.
Right.
It's not at the end like, oh, they can remember the candle and you got to grab beside like it's a birthday. No, as soon as they sit down, it says Happy Birthday. Knowing that someone, you know, if someone's, you know, a fan of the restaurant and they're pregnant and they're in New York City and we could send their favorite dish to the hospital that night.
Wow. You know, have you done that for fans?
Sure, we have, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So things like that, that goes a long way. And it's not me. It's my staff that we have one waiter at Kraft named Cesar who's just incredible. I mean, he's talk about a guy who will go out of his way to make you happy. These are all little things that they pick up on. It's a lot of little things. Every now and then it's a big gesture, but it's a lot of small little things that people just know, like, oh, you're thinking. You're going the distance. You're serious about making us happy. It's not just a slogan.
Right, and you're on my side, like you said before.
Yeah.
What happens if someone that you're a fan of, not a food person,
right,
someone you're a fan of comes into your restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get butterflies in your stomach? You go like, I really want to make them happy. I'm a big fan. Do you go over and you say like, hi, I'm Tom. This is my restaurant.
So I'll give you one good fan. I was a huge fan of his. And someone famous, I remember when Neil Young came in and he was here for the toy show because he owned Lionel Trains. He was an investor in Lionel Trains after they almost went bankrupt. And so I was a huge fan, but I didn't want to go to the table. And so what I would do is park myself at the podium on the way out. And so I remember saying hi to him, and he was like, yeah. And then I said something along the lines of, you know, growing up, I had Lionel Trains, and they were really important to me. And I knew he was in town for the toy show. And then he was like, oh, wow, that's great.
You opened him wide up by saying that.
But, no, you know, my feeling is that everyone's treated like a fan if they're in the restaurant. And you know, there are certain people that I went out of my way to say hi to. But for the most part, I don't like to bother people who are in the restaurant. I just don't like being intrusive when someone's having dinner.
So I wanted to ask also, you know, there are these moments where there's like a food craze. How much do you track that stuff? Because are you paying attention to the trends in food and saying like, how can I apply that to what I do? Are you looking at the way that fandoms are popping up around certain areas of eating?
Well, something like the Corona comes around, that becomes an absolute, you know, again, white hot fans, people line up for it. There's a line people waiting for food.
It's
kind of crazy. But I don't ever look for that. It's
right.
Not like, you know, I got to come up with now my Corona. For me, I'll put together dishes. I like them. If people like them, great. But I don't know how applicable that is to kind of restaurants that I have.
Right.
I think it's actually more applicable. And this is when we first opened Witchcraft, we had a cinnamon bun. People would come and line up for the cinnamon bun. People would come from, you know, we were on 19th between Park and Broadway, and people would come from the Upper East Side or Upper West Side and order 10. And then they would say, can we get them frozen? Can I get like, you know, 40?
Right. Take them home and heat them up.
But you
did nothing to market that.
No.
It's just the product itself.
And I don't think the Corona was marketed. It was just, you know, someone said it was great, and then somebody else, another influencer, confirmed it, and another influencer confirmed it.
Do you like when that happens?
It's fine. I don't have that much of an opinion about it. It's like, you know, I cheer it on in a way because it's kind of cool to see it happen.
Yeah.
But then it hits a point where it's like, really? Okay. Enough of that. Let's move on.
That was Tom Colicchio, top chef judge, New York City restaurant owner, and all-around purveyor of incredible taste. You can check out his latest food endeavors at craftedhospitality.com. And that's it for today's foodie episode of Fan Club. Fan Club is a V by Viacom and Pineapple Studios production. And our executive producer is Brooke DeVard. On our next episode, we're going to take a peek at my own sneaker closet. All that and more next time on Fan Club.